The NBA playoffs are here, and with FanDuel, your group chat's about to be going off. Because right now, new customers can bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets if you win. And with live bets, your heart emojis will really be racing from tip-off to the final buzzer. Plus, when you win, you'll get paid faster than your friends can send you a victory gift. Or is it GIF? Who cares? You won! So get the word out to your crew and download FanDuel today. New customers bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets if you win. Make every moment more with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. Official partner of the NBA.
21 plus and present in Ohio. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See full terms at FanDuel.com/sportsbook. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Hey, Fidelity. What's it cost to invest with the Fidelity app?
Start with as little as $1 with no account fees or trade commissions on U.S. stocks and ETFs.
That's music to my ears.
I can only talk.
Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Zero account fees apply to retail brokerage accounts only. $0 commission applies to online U.S. equity trades and ETFs and retail Fidelity accounts. Sell order assessment fee not included. Some account types and securities excluded. Details at fidelity.com/commissions. Fidelity Brokerage Services LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
Today's show is brought to you by IBM. 16 million new collar jobs will be created by 2024. To help fill them, IBM's new education model gives high school students workplace experience and an associate's degree. 90 P-Tech schools are already preparing graduates for tomorrow's STEM careers. Let's put smart to work. Find out how at ibm.com/P-Tech. Hi, I'm Kara Swisher, executive editor of Recode, and you're listening to Too Embarrassed to Ask, coming to you from the Vox Media Podcast Network. This is a show where we answer all of your embarrassing questions about consumer tech and this week's news. You can send us your questions on Twitter with the hashtag TooEmbarrassed. We also have an email address, tooembarrassed@recode.net. Reminder, there are two R's and two S's in embarrassed in case you cannot spell. Today on Too Embarrassed to Ask, I'm delighted to be in the studio with NYU professor Scott Galloway, who is a favorite of mine and also the podcast. Very popular. I don't know if you know this. You're one of the more popular podcasts.
Thank you.
And because you're prescient, apparently.
Yeah.
He's the author of The Four, his recent book, The Hidden DNA of Amazon, Apple, Facebook, and Google, which we've talked about in the past. And this is his third time on the Recode podcast. He's been on my other show, Recode Decode, twice, including one time where he famously predicted Amazon would buy Whole Foods, and then they did it. Scott, welcome to Too Embarrassed to Ask. We have a lot of questions from people who are distrustful of The Four and other big tech companies. But I just want to sort of get, since we talked about, and since the book came out, give me some of your thoughts of what's going on, because so much has happened, the Facebook things, Facebook hearings in Congress. We had, you know, Google announced a whole bunch of new stuff. Apple is doubling down. I got Tim Cook to talk about privacy.
That was huge.
And then, obviously, $1 trillion Apple kind of stuff. So there's a lot, and Amazon, everything it does. So let's just give me a quick synopsis, then we'll get to questions, because we have a million questions for people for you.
So just in the time, you know, publishing isn't kind of what I'll call the epicenter of innovation, and there's a lag between when you write something and when it's published. And when I was writing this, the general feedback from the publisher was, this is great and we want to protect your voice, but is this really going to happen? It seems like you're being a little out of control around the threat these companies present. And the worm has turned. I mean, if you look at where we were 2 years ago, the only argument was which CEO was more Christ-like or going to run for president. And it was a love fest. And now everyone's
We'll get to Elon Musk in a second.
There you go. Now everyone's piling on. So I would say just the sentiment has changed dramatically. But what's interesting is, from a business standpoint, no one cares. So Facebook appears to be negligent in terms of putting in place the safeguards to ensure the
platform is safe.
Ensure that it's not weaponized. Everyone's outraged. Where do they go to express their outrage? Facebook and Instagram. A conservative commentator mocks a 17-year-old, which is a terrible thing. She loses a third of her advertisers within 7 days. Facebook undermines the democracy, and Pep Boys and Playboy say they've had enough. Seven of the 5 million advertisers. Facebook right now is probably one of the cheapest stocks in tech. It's trading at a forward multiple of 20. The S&P trades at 17, but Facebook's growing 49% a year versus 6%. So it doesn't appear that anyone that matters from a business standpoint cares about this. Specifically, advertisers and consumers don't really seem to care.
Right, and the same thing around privacy. I just had Antonio Garcia Martinez talk about that with Facebook specifically. It's like people don't care about privacy the way maybe Congress or Faux cares about it, and citizens don't.
Talking about privacy is like putting on mom jeans. It just makes you look old, right? So it, show me someone complaining about privacy. I'll show you someone who's over the age of 40 and is in Brussels or D.C.
Uh-huh.
But,
well,
know,
Tim Cook, yeah.
But that is shareholder-driven.
Yes, absolutely.
I generally believe that's principled. But that would be like Larry and Sergey all of a sudden becoming very concerned that kids are spending too much time on screens.
Right.
You know, there's a shareholder-driven rationale for him saying that privacy matters. I'm sure it's principled, but it foots to shareholder value.
So going forward with the four, what are the themes now then? What, from your perspective, you had certain themes and you named, all of them had a different DNA, essentially, different instinct. So what are the themes now since you've written that?
I still think they're as powerful as ever. The major theme, I would argue, that's been one of the true kind of the absolutes in history is that power corrupts.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe these firms have too much power. They're not bad people, but history is littered with terrible events started by people who were started out good people but had too much power. If you buy into the American way, you buy into checks and balances. We're going to have to endure Trump for a maximum of 6 years. Putin will be dead in 10 to 20. Mark Zuckerberg could be around for 70 years.
Right.
So
right.
I think this is, you know, someone, Kalster's called him a dictator. I think that's being unfair to dictators. Most of them are going to go away.
Yeah.
So I think
he's staying there.
I think
he's
the theme really is power corrupts and that we're at a natural point of the economic cycle where the marketplace needs to be oxygenated and we need to break them up.
So we're going to talk about that. But first, let's get some questions. We've got a ton of them. Tracy Fellows asks, I'm going to go through them and then we're going to go back and forth and talk about different things. As biometric data starts to augment and perhaps even replace behavioral data, how will GAFA, I guess that's Google, Amazon, Apple. Okay, GAFA.
Yeah.
Okay, convince us they have a code of conduct in place or responsible enough to look after such highly personal, individual, and sensitive data. It's not like they have covered themselves so far in glory.
Well, they won't, but
right. But
advertisers and consumers won't care. Look, consumers talk a big game about supply chain ethics, and but they want that little black dress for $9.99, and they want their Nespresso pods within 48 hours. So the revolution's not going to be consumer-led. Believing, just as the NRA could never connect assault weapon sales with mass shootings of children, and tobacco could never make the connection between tobacco and cancer, Facebook is never going to make the connection between unfettered content
and
advertisers.
Really good.
And shareholder value, they're never going to, and the subterfuge of our democracy, they're never going to make that connection.
Right.
And you know what? It's not their job. It's our job to elect people who make those connections and regulate them and hold them to the same standards that we hold every other company. So who's at fault here? It's us, Kara. I mean, it's the man in the mirror, or the woman in the mirror. It's the citizenry. We have to elect people that hold them accountable. A better business model for a manufacturer, a much better business model for General Motors and its employees and its shareholders would be if they could pour their mercury into the river.
Mm-hmm.
It's a better business model.
Right, and
it's
we stopped them.
Yeah. And we said, no, you're now liable for that mercury, and we regulated them. For some reason,
or
we continue.
Or seat belts, or tobacco.
Whatever it might be. Or two pilots in a cockpit, right?
Whatever
it is, that we have decided that with most industries, a certain amount of regulatory intervention or trust busting is warranted. For some reason, with these guys, our leaders don't have the domain expertise.
Talk about the hearings. What was your, did you watch them all? I watched every bit.
Fascinating.
Right. They were fascinating.
The 600.
Did he look like Data? Someone just told me he looked like Data.
That's an interesting one. I think he looked like my paper. I think he looks so young. But the 600 communications professionals at Facebook, they have 600 of them, did their job.
Mm-hmm.
They played us in Congress perfectly. They employed the oldest strategy in sports, burn the clock.
Mm-hmm.
They noticed the glitch in the matrix was they were stupid enough that all these megalomaniacs didn't get in a room and say, hey, does anyone here understand technology? And maybe the representative, Lisa, said, yeah, I get technology. And they go, okay, Lisa, we're going to give you 10 minutes and we're going to take Bob's 5 minutes away. But they were too ego-driven to do that.
Right.
They realized the glitch in the matrix and they said, if you look at it, and I wrote this all down, repeat the question slowly, say senator, repeat that it's an important question, one of eight different talking points. And if they ask a follow-up question that's more probing, say this is an important question, I need to get back to you, 4, 3, 2, 1, gavel drops, next question.
Right.
They literally employed burn the clock. It was Facebook 1, the U.S. and Congress 0. It demonstrated that the lack of domain expertise and will in Washington means absolutely nothing constructive is going to come out
of
D.C.
It's astonishing. One of the things I said, someone was like, oh, he did well. I said, he didn't do well. They did badly. It was not, he did well for their, the way they set it up.
It was remarkably unremarkable.
Yeah.
They managed to say nothing over and over every 5 minutes.
Right, right.
So what would be really fun is the hearings in front of Parliament in the U.K.
Yeah,
that's the event you want to cover.
Because they're a little savvier and have no,
and
they're going to to let them ask the questions.
Yeah, they're going to. And if someone actually sounds like they know what they're talking about, they're going to say, I yield my time to you. They're not going to let them get away with this burn the clock.
Right. Strategy. And to me, what was the most striking example of that? Orrin Hatch not knowing what they did? Or?
Oh, my senator from Florida, Bill Nelson. When I tell my friends I like chocolate, I get ads for chocolate. What if I don't want them? It was just sort of. They came across as so clueless.
Right.
And I think they still are infected with that deference.
Yeah.
Why would they supply to him other than he's a billionaire? Mm-hmm. I don't get it. I think they would have gone. If there had been a 55-year-old mm-hmm. who was only worth $10 million, mm-hmm. they wouldn't have been a deferential. But mm-hmm. we now worship at the altar of youth and mm-hmm. billionaires, and he's both those things.
Right, right, right. And then they did hand him with kid gloves. It was astonishing. It was kind of fascinating in terms
I'm curious to get your take, but I thought they absolutely
I
got
thought he
played.
Didn't, I thought they got played. I think the obsession with terms of service— like as if it was the biggest national security that you can't read the terms of service. I was like, who cares? Like, get to the actual, like, what happened is what I would like to know. Why did you, there's so many questions. Why was nobody fired? How did Cambridge Analytica slip through? Because I know you guys do monitor companies that have your data, and I know you can chase them down, and I know you do chase them down. Why didn't they get chased down? How did the system go into place? Who was monitoring the platform? Why wasn't anybody, did those people not there? What happened to the platform?
We can write the questions.
Right, we could do. Oh, I'm going to be asking Sheryl Sandberg those in a couple of weeks.
Haven't you committed involuntary treason? Start there.
Yeah.
Right? If you don't put up any safeguards, and you know these things are happening, and you refuse to put up those safeguards, what have they said? There will always be bad actors.
Mm-hmm.
That's basically acknowledging it's going to happen again.
Right, which they did say.
Starbucks has an unfortunate incident at their store. It's terrible. They close it down for a day, and they've gotten a lot of abuse for it. Do you think Facebook would close their platform down for a minute?
No, I suggested they did.
For a minute?
For a minute,
they won't even refuse to take political ads.
Right, right, right. How did they not monitor political ads? I could go on and on.
Yeah.
Like, what happened between 2012 and 2000?
Let's have our own hearings.
Yes,
I'm ready.
We are. Okay, we're going to. All right, next question. It feels like telecom companies keep playing dirty in the sandbox. I don't know. That's seeing these companies play a major role in connecting customers and big tech. How will telecom affect the future of business? Okay, the AT&T thing. This just happened this week.
I think they're in trouble. I mean, the call by Trump to restrain, and it was Trump, to restrain the AT&T Time Warner merger is ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
Because the complaint there is its content and distribution is too powerful. So you have distribution of 130 million AT&T contracts, and then you have content of Time Warner, HBO, CNN, Turner, mm-hmm. great content. All right, so that's powerful. However, now let's look at the content and distribution peanut butter and chocolate of Google. 2 billion installed Android devices, the largest video network in the world, YouTube, but AT&T needs to sell Adult Swim.
Mm-hmm.
Amazon has penetration in 2/3 of U.S. households with Amazon Prime. No cable company has anywhere like that. Second largest spender, $5.5 billion in original content. But Time Warner has to sell the Cartoon Network?
Mm-hmm.
So one of two things is happening. Either the call to restrain AT&T acquiring Time Warner is ridiculous, mm-hmm. or we should have broken these guys up 10 years ago.
Right.
So I think the telcos are playing defense for the first time right now. I think they're back on their heels, and I think they need to merge. And everybody's bulking up because one of the few things you can do to push back is bulk up.
Right. They also entered into the Michael Cohen universe, which was astonishing.
That's strange.
You couldn't have added a weirder.
I mean, it's strange.
We have Randall Stephenson coming to Code in a couple of weeks.
But you know what? I empathize with them. It's like, hate the game, not the player. Washington is pay to play. This happens everywhere. They didn't realize this guy was such a, you know, an undesirable. But if someone comes to you and says,
He looks like he was important, right?
Does he?
He did. He looked at the time when they hired him.
Well, yeah, he was the personal attorney to Donald Trump.
And he got you up.
I can see how it happened. I think it's more of an indictment on the pay-to-play system we have that I don't think, quite frankly, I'm not sure AT&T did anything wrong. I think it was just bad judgment.
Did any impact on what's going to happen here? Good or bad? It could be good. Like, looks like they were...
I'll turn it back to you. What do you think?
I don't know. They apologized quickly and said this was a stupid—
I think they handled it well.
Yeah, they handled it well. I think this merger probably will go through.
Yeah, I think so, too.
I think it'll go through, and it won't— I don't think they'll have to sell much of anything.
They'll ask him to sell one or two things so they can say they did their
they
job.
They can't sell CNN. They can't sell CNN.
That would seem too obvious. That would seem too much.
But
they'll sell some weird thing, and they'll come up with a reason for it, and everyone will feel like they got what they wanted. But,
right. But you're 100% right about they need to bulk up. This is just, like, they are literally ignoring four companies. You know, it was really interesting to me. I was thinking about this the other day. When we had Microsoft around, and you were around, and I covered that trial, too, it was one company that was doing everything. This is four or five of them together and apart that are doing it. And so that's what makes it difficult. You can't, like, at one point someone asked Mark Zuckerberg in the hearings, do you have any competition? And he was like, Senator, everybody. Like, but I was like, yeah, you do, but you don't. Like,
well, and so social didn't invent, it wasn't around when Microsoft was around. There was
right,
software.
But that was Facebook it. Has competition, but they have adjacent competition. It's not.
Do they really?
They don't. That's what I'm saying. And so they're like individually, like it literally is like a Game of Thrones. You've got, you know, Westeros, you've got this thing, but they're all powerful in their own way, but they're, and just as bad as Microsoft was by itself, individually.
They have social and they own apps. Six of the top 10 apps. They dominate social. I mean, think
about
it. And then
you have Apple over here with their dominance, Amazon with their dominance.
Everybody's got their sandbox. And they're bumping up against each other because they all feel that they're the rightful heir to the throne.
Mm-hmm.
But they're monopolies in their own category. If look at Facebook. If the four largest retailers, if Walmart, Kroger's, Home Depot, and CVS got together every morning and said, we're going to focus all our resources on putting number five, Target, out of business, Target would go out of business.
Right.
That's what's going on with Snap. Snap's the Walking Dead because
the
four biggest players, Instagram, Facebook, WhatsApp, and Messenger, every morning meet and say, how do we put these guys out of business? That's
anti-competitive
behavior.
I will ask that to Evan Spiegel, who's coming. But he's so innovative and interesting. There's only so much you can do. So many
moves. It's a great company. We wish it would survive. It's the Walking Dead.
Right.
It'll
all right. I'll
next
tell him that.
Months.
You said that. All right. Travis Parker Martin asks, in your book, you say that a defining aspect of being in the four is being liked by the public, which is why Uber won't be a fifth anytime soon. Maybe they are now.
Yep.
Given the backlash against Facebook, how does it affect the medium long-term status as a tech giant and a likable tech giant? I think likability is overrated, as you know.
Yeah, I think this is probably highlighted that it's not as important as I probably said in the book. Although I think Sheryl Sandberg is infinitely likable.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they were brilliant putting her out in front of Mark Zuckerberg. He's not a likable guy. I just don't think, he's just a little bit awkward.
Yeah, he's not dislikable.
I think she is inspiring and intelligent and a fantastic role model. And I think they were smart to kind of push her out front. I also think that these companies...
Well, has she been hurt a little bit? A lot of people in Silicon Valley feel like she has.
100%.
Initially,
in my opinion, and I you know this better than I do, I don't know her. I think she was planning on running for president and has basically shot herself in the foot because what she failed to realize is the public anoints leaders based on the risks they take, not the ones they avoid.
Mm-hmm.
And I think both of them decided to retreat to the caves of Kandahar for a week. And one of the keys to handling a crisis is that you immediately respond. And they said,
They're really nice caves, just so you know.
Yeah,
they have fresh kombucha.
They say, well, we wanted to make sure we knew what was going on. Well, you come out right away and you say, we don't know what's going on, but we're going to come out here every day and tell you what we know. So Facebook and Cambridge Analytica is literally the textbook case study on how not to handle a crisis.
Uh-huh.
They violated the pillars of crisis management.
Why do you think that happened?
Well, you respond immediately.
Yeah.
Even if you don't need the information, you have the top guy or gal take responsibility and acknowledge
Starbucks,
the issue.
Right.
And they were playing slow ball the whole way.
Yeah.
Right?
That's their thing, though.
Slow ball.
Slow roll is Facebook.
Slow ball, not acknowledging the issue. And then the key is to overcorrect,
to
clear the shelves of every bottle of Tylenol, even though it was an isolated incident in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
What do they do? What have they really done?
Mm-hmm.
What have they really done to address this issue? Okay, they're catching up to what traditional media has been doing for 30 years. They're going to have to label, you're going to have to identify
yourself
as political. A bunch of
tools, the browser, clear your browser.
An audit, stuff like, but for the most part, does this even come anywhere close to an overcorrection?
Mm-hmm.
And to a certain extent, it looks as if I'm wrong and they're right.
Mm-hmm.
Because
it doesn't matter, the stock is.
Look what happened to the stock. They crushed earnings.
But you were saying damage, scars that maybe aren't going to heal quite the way they imagine.
I think short-term Facebook is an incredible buy. We were talking about this. Trades at a forward multiple of 20. S&P trades at 16. The S&P is growing 6%. Facebook's growing 49. I would like to think over the medium and long-term that dictators come to a bad end.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe
Ceausescu. Ultimately.
Or Gaddafi, whoever, let's go on. And I should back up and say I'm not comparing Zuckerberg to either of those. But the absolute here.
I just wanted
here,
to say Ceausescu.
That is a cool name.
Yeah, he was an awful.
They killed him and
human.
His wife.
His wife, yeah.
Anyways,
probably they should have done it twice as far as I'm concerned.
Hung him and then shot him?
Yeah.
that threw me off. So with Zuckerberg, Castro took over Cuba at 11 million people. We were freaked out. Zuckerberg oversees the content and influence and mood of a community greater than Christianity, the Southern Hemisphere plus India. And by the way, he's going to be with us for 70 years.
Yeah.
I think it's frightening.
Yeah.
Good. And by the way, I think he's probably a good guy. But
pretty good guy.
If you believe in the American system,
yeah.
The key central to our system is checks and balances and term limits.
He's got none, and he got none. All right, Justin Fincher, are there some technologies that are launched slower than they could be due to probable public reaction? Example, self-driving 18-wheelers putting a bunch of drivers out of work. So tech comes out over years instead of months. So should be launched slower. Should what they're doing, like you're saying, they're going to be here for 70 years, but they're going to keep launching their stuff.
That's a thoughtful question I don't have a good answer for. So I wonder, I mean, there's some technologies that are supposed to be, change the word, VR, 3D printing, Internet of Things that I think have been huge head fakes. I actually believe self-driving cars is one of those technologies that's going to change the world, but
Absolutely.
It's going to be a terrible place to invest.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you look at the auto industry, it's a low margin, fairly competitive, efficient business. It hasn't stuck its chin out the same way that the media business had it coming. It was purposely opaque. They didn't tell you which half of your advertising was being wasted. They stuck their chin out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was just wasteful. The auto industry, not so much. Daimler, Benz, and Ford are capital-intensive, efficient companies. So I think any company, whether it's Apple or Google or some of the tech companies I've been speaking to, I think any effort to go into that industry is a shareholder-destroying mm-hmm. Move. I think it's going to be great for us as citizens.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Copenhagen's going to go all driverless. It's
mm-hmm.
going to be fun in New York.
Mm-hmm.
But from a shareholder standpoint, I would argue that the technology of self-driving cars is an example of a technology along with virtual reality
mm-hmm.
that it results in incredible destruction of shareholder value.
For these companies. Well, look, at Facebook's deep into it.
VR or self-driving cars?
VR.
Yeah, but that's just stupid. VR's. Then this again goes back to the notion that we anoint these people the Jesus Christ of our generation, and then he says virtual reality is going to unlock new worlds.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God, Jesus Christ has identified
mm-hmm.
a new
mm-hmm.
technology. Everyone from Samsung to Kleiner Perkins throws hundreds of millions of billions of dollars into VR without acknowledging one thing: no one is going to put something on their face that makes them look stupid.
Right.
It makes them less likely to procreate.
Right.
And you look stupid wearing mm-hmm. VR. It's just, I mean, think about it. You're wearing Ray-Bans. I'm wearing Warby Parker. You just don't put something on your face, much less your person.
Oh, it's interesting.
I
just did a really, in Carne Arena, which Lorraine Jobs is paying for, this artistic installation. It was a VR one. It actually was the first time I effectively thought it was an interesting thing because I was in an art installation. And it worked. They had a lot of physical things. You walked on dirt. You felt wind, and it put you in an immigration, crossing
mm-hmm.
the border. And it actually was, well, you didn't empathetically feel fear, you know,
mm-hmm.
you didn't, that these people do. It was an effective use of it in an artistic sense.
And IMAX is a fantastic
yeah.
experience,
and
it's worth about $500 million. I mean, there'll be niche applications.
Right.
But it's not going to be—
Yeah, you're right.
You know,
but I was thinking—
Williams-Sonoma is going to be worth more than all of VR.
Yeah, they were putting it on my head, and I'm like, I said, ready for prime time, and I think the people weren't paying attention. I was saying, this is just ridiculous. I should be able to put on a pair of glasses and feel this.
The test is anytime
you
have— Anytime you have something in the hallway of a conference, it means it's a failed technology, right? Remember how many 3D printers? You probably had one
yes.
at Recode. Or whatever.
No, I hated 3D printers.
Have you had VR headsets?
Yeah,
we've had it.
We've had it.
At Cannes.
We may have more.
We all lined up to play some weird game or feel like what it's like to be on a roller coaster. And then it's wow, that's amazing. Would you buy one? No way.
See a glimpse of what it could be like. Like surfing. Like I don't ever want to surf a big wave in Hawaii, but I'd like to feel what it was like. I could see.
Oh, you should surf.
I did. I took a surfing lesson, Scott, recently.
It's fun.
I was fine. But
it's not too many sharks where you are, but it's fun.
I get that. But I'm talking about an enormous wave that I would never do. So it would be cool to experience.
Yeah, once. Are you going to have one of these in your home?
Yes, exactly. That's what I mean.
It's just not.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a head fake.
Right. All right. Okay. Scott Siebold, we have one more question to get to the break. I'd love to hear Scott Galloway talk about MoviePass and the brands of the future in the movie industry. Is MoviePass sustainable? Is it another Spotify, Uber, or Airbnb, et cetera? Customers love the service, but it has to make up its margins in the B2B space, and other businesses, particularly AMC, seem to hate it. Are there companies that have faced similar problems? How will it convince other brands to work with them? MoviePass is obviously this, you get to watch as many movies as you want.
Yeah. So I think MoviePass is like Wayfair. I think the business model makes no sense. And unless they get acquired and create—
Explain Wayfair as a furniture.
Wayfair, the online furniture startup. Two-thirds of Williams-Sonoma customers, or restoration customers, buy again within 12 months. Wayfair, it's one-third, so it doesn't have nearly the loyalty.
Mm-hmm.
The amount of money they're spending on TV advertising, it's pets.com.
Yeah.
And so was Jet.com. And Jet.com got acquired. So they're playing a game of chicken. And maybe they'll win, but I would say MoviePass falls in that category. If you look at the economic model, it just doesn't – I mean, when the music stops, it's going to be pretty ugly there. So the CEO's ability to tell a story and raise a ton of capital to get out the other end and have a panicked old economy movie theater chain buy them, maybe – but he's playing a dangerous game. He has a gun cocked and loaded at his head, and it's going off every few seconds until he gets acquired. So I would say it's about a two-thirds chance it gets acquired for below the cash that's gone into the company or outright goes out of business. But movie theaters are largely going away. They're going to be a place where you go where what I'll call teenagers and red states go to see these awful superhero films. Right. And then everybody else is going to find that their viewing experience at home is just superior.
Right. Or even on your phone, which is interesting. I haven't been in a movie theater in a long time. I used to go all the
time. Why would you? I'm scared going to movies. I know realize how stupid, lame that makes me feel.
Yeah, yeah.
But I go to movie theaters, and I don't enjoy the experience. I don't feel it's, you know, there's something called iPick, which is amazing. But generally speaking, the viewing experience at home, I just watched this great new show off of I forget the network, called The Terror. And it's so well done. And I keep discovering these new TV
things
series.
Things that Netflix has, and hundreds of them.
Oh, my. The key to happiness, working out, depth of your relationships, and more TV, Kara.
Right.
More TV. When we look back on this era, on our age, we'll identify that the defining art form of our age was television.
Yeah.
It's
always
incredible,
been,
right?
For me. Even back then.
It's it for you, works
all, in the Family, all, you know, Maude, like go you know, way
Mary
back.
Mary Tyler Moore.
All of them.
Yeah.
It always has been.
Yeah, Frasier.
Movies have not been what's changed. My movies were for my mom, for sure. Like, she went down to the movie theater. And you're right, the experience, if they don't have a lie back chair, I ain't going to a movie theater anymore.
Do they have an iPick in San Francisco?
Yeah, they got a lot of them. Of course, we got it all.
Yeah,
you know, and they have good food, actually. Good
food.
Yeah,
and they bring you alcohol.
They bring you alcohol.
Which is genius.
Yeah, I know. There's one called Alamo Draft House, obviously, going around the country. All right, we're going to take a quick break. So you think it's done, MoviePass. What about the idea of it? What do you think of the idea of it?
So every boardroom in a consumer company needs to ask, how do we overinvest, create an incredible value proposition, and convince the consumer to be monogamous with us and go into a recurring revenue relationship?
Right.
Every consumer company needs to be asking that. Mm-hmm. And they've done it, but in order to get the share they initially want out of the box, they've had to discount and create an economic model that just doesn't work. But it's the right idea. Recurring revenue, membership, not think about it, anything I want. I don't have to do the trade-offs of how much, which movie I'm willing to pay for. That's where the world is headed. It just doesn't, they're just not capitalized well enough to pull it
off. Right, and they've also antagonized the people they need to be partners with.
And the distribution, the theaters or the content guys?
The theaters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'll be, I think they're pioneers and are going to end up with mud on their face and arrows in their back.
But the idea.
Oh, makes all the sense in the world.
Right.
We're moving to a small number of relationships that we pay a monthly
fee. Like Amazon Prime.
Someone, take my clothes. I'm going to pay somebody.
Right.
I'm on the board of Urban Outfitters, and I hope it's us. I think we're in a position to have a group of very affluent and middle-income, tasteful, professional females say, take my apparel decision-making off.
Yeah.
Off the table and handle it for me.
Yeah.
Handle it and do a really good job, and I'll pay you $49.99, $299
a
month.
And send it back.
I don't want to make any decisions.
For the fancy stuff, I don't want to own it anymore.
I don't like it.
You need
easy
your
to
jeans
return.
And your T-shirt, which is interesting, and everything else in
get
and
to
out.
Know me, know what I like, know that I have a weird-shaped body, and just take the decision-making. I never need to go into an apparel store again. Buying a high-end bag or a Panerai watch, that's fun. But 90% of our purchases are low consideration. We're going to move to a series of portals.
Did I tell you about my recent experience with Stitch Fix? It was really interesting. So I've been doing it because we're having Katarina on stage at Code. And so, and I'm not the demo, like I'm way too old. But they would send me stuff and I'd send it back. I try on everything. It was interesting. And I like the concept kind of thing. And because I don't like stores. And every time they get it wrong. And then this last time, I liked three things and I kept them. I actually bought them. And I would have rather have rented them, but I kept them. I liked them. And in the note from the stylist, she said, I finally figured you out. You're androgynous and simple.
She used the word androgynous?
Yeah.
That's pretty ballsy.
I know. I was like, fuck you. But then I was like, and accurate. And so it was
the truth hurts, right?
Well, I was like, okay, got it. She got it, and I thought, okay, she gets me.
I'll give you an example. I think Stitch Fix is a head fake. The core competence of Stitch Fix is the core competence of every specialty retailer. You know what they have at Stitch Fix? They have really good merchants.
Mm-hmm.
They sent you pretty cool stuff.
Yeah.
They call it AI, so they can get traded a multiple of revenues versus a multiple of EBITDA. Be clear. They're a great specialty retailer that hired really talented merchants, and then their PR department called it AI.
Yeah. Yep. All right, then. On that, Scott, we're going to take a quick break from a word from our sponsors, and then we'll get back with Scott Galloway. Scott, can you give me your best reading of the line, hashtag money? Just say hashtag money in a very—
Hashtag money.
No, no. In a way that people would want to buy.
Want to buy what? I don't
Anything
know.
Anything worth selling. Fears. I'm going to give you, I'm going to toss you an IBM ad in a second.
You're going to toss me an IBM
No,
ad?
I'm not going to. I just want you to say hashtag money in a very compelling way that would make people want to buy something.
Literally hashtag money.
All right, forget it, Scott.
I mean, I don't understand what, right, I'm so confused.
I know, just stay right there.
Today's show is brought to you by IBM. By 2050, the world population will reach nearly 10 billion and food production will need to grow by 70%. What if artificial intelligence could help? Farmers are already using it to help increase crop yields. Watson and the IBM cloud provides access to weather data and analyze satellite imagery to help them monitor soil moisture levels and to reduce water waste. So as the population grows, more food can be put on tables. Let's put smart to work. Find out how at ibm.com/smart.
Hashtag money.
Today's show is also brought to you by LinkedIn. Here's my colleague, Nishad Kurwa, to tell you more.
When it comes to marketing your business, it's all about reaching the right audience at the right time. So if you want to target your customers where they're engaging every day and when they're ready to make a decision, LinkedIn can help. When you advertise on LinkedIn, you have the opportunity to build long-term relationships with your customers, relationships that often translate into high-quality leads, website traffic, and higher brand awareness. The first step? Talking to the right audience. LinkedIn has the marketing tools to help you target your customers with precision, down to their job title, company name, and industry. 4 out of 5 customers who are on LinkedIn are decision makers of their companies, so you're building relationships that really matter. To redeem a free $100 LinkedIn ad credit and launch your first campaign, go to linkedin.com/media. That's linkedin.com/media for your free $100 ad credit. Terms and conditions apply.
And we're back with Scott Galloway, who's my favorite pundit. Are you a pundit, Scott? You just have a lot of things to say here at L2. We're at the L2 Studios. Scott is also a professor at NYU. We have some questions for our listeners about stuff you said on Rico Dico, which I said you've been a guest twice. This is the third time. The first time you're on the show, you predicted Amazon would be the first company to be worth $1 trillion, but it turns out perhaps not. So here's the first question from Harvard Winters ask, will Professor Galloway finally admit Apple will get to $1 trillion in market cap first? If not, and how much will he bet me on Amazon? So
I'll bet this individual a Prime membership that Amazon gets there first.
Oh, wow. Why is that? Scott, explain yourself.
Everywhere that Amazon bumps up against every other company, it's winning, whether it's in voice, whether it's in streaming video, whether it's even in hardware, they're winning. In addition, when your investors allow you to reinvest 100 cents on the consumer dollar, whereas the other three have to reinvest, only get to reinvest somewhere between 60 and 90 cents, you're just going to win. You're going to win. We're going to see Amazon start to take share and market capitalization away from the other three. It is there. If you were going to write a sequel to The Four, it would be called The One. It would be Amazon.
The now, One. Ooh. As in there can be only?
It feels to me like the closest to the Iron Throne is, in fact, Amazon.
Well, I was
right
actually
now.
Referring to a much better movie, which is Highlander. But anyway.
Highlander?
There can be only one.
Do you watch Outlander? The one with
Auslander, yes. Yeah. No, yeah, I do. But Highlander was a movie. You got to go back and watch. It was back in the day.
Sean Connery. But that was the guy from Tarzan.
Yeah, the Tarzan guy.
Yeah.
And it was There Can Be Only One. And then it was
and
him.
And they cut their heads off.
Yeah, exactly. And then lightning came out of their heads. Fantastic.
Good stuff.
All right, so Amazon before Apple, because everyone's sort of on this Apple watch.
Well, okay, because Apple's closest. Apple's at about 930. And if you wanted to be snarky, you would say Apple's already at $1 trillion because they'll return $100 billion to shareholders this year.
Yeah.
So if they maintain $900 billion, they're already at $1 trillion. Look, Apple's an amazing company, but no one has the momentum of Amazon. So I'm sticking to my guns with Amazon.
Okay. And then what does that mean, being a $1 trillion company? What is that from a—
Almost nothing, except we'll obsess over it because it's a psychological barrier.
All right, here's another question about Amazon that was tweeted to us by New York Spicebo or something like that. Do you feel like your predictions make Amazon suffer from the Hawthorne effect? My producer did some extensive Googling and found the Hawthorne effect refers to individuals altering their behavior in response to being observed. That's Schrodinger's cat, right? One example is that employees at a company working harder because they know the boss is watching. So is Amazon changing how it's business because of you, Scott?
I hate smart questions. No, absolutely no. I'm not even a gnat on the windshield for Amazon.
He
I don't think in any way I don't think in any way they find me threatening or I influence. Although supposedly, I've gotten calls from all of them. They all say the same thing. Come out and meet with us. We want to update you on our thinking.
Yeah.
They all kind of say the same
thing. Yeah, they do that. They do that to me, too.
But you're a journalist. You have an obligation to meet with them. I don't want to meet with them because I know what's going to happen. I'm going to meet them. I'm going to like them. And I'm going to stop speaking my mind. So I've said,
oh, that's a good point.
I'm not going to meet with you. And
you can't
one
be mean
them,
to people you like? Well, I'm really good
I have
at
a
that.
Difficult time. You're much more you're much more fair. I my emotions get in the way.
I was meeting with an internet person and they're like, I'm so glad we've become friends. I'm like, we're not friends.
We're not friends.
I said it out loud and they're like, what?
Don't
and they're like,
yourself.
I said, I'm here because I want information from you. And they're like, oh,
yeah,
I
you
go.
You should be wary of that.
Yeah, yeah. I was like, sorry.
No, we're not
you
friends.
Need to get better friends.
But one of them called me back and was actually quite aggressive and said, you have an obligation to meet with us because you're out in the public talking about us and saying damaging things. And I said, I'm not a journalist. I don't have any obligation to meet with you.
They go crazy. Yeah, they go crazy when you say damaging things. I said one thing on CNBC, Amazon was on the phone to me like seconds later. It was I was sort of like, whoa, that was so fast.
But you're a journalist. I think you're held to a higher standard. I think in America.
It was a minor thing I said. You don't understand. I said something, I'm making a joke about
their
warehouse.
Also, you carry more weight than me. They see me as a harmless professor hanging out with a Labrador in a sweater, a cardigan, smoking a pipe.
I don't think so. So are you not going to visit them?
I don't want to know
them. You don't want to see some of their warehouses? They're pretty cool.
I would absolutely go see the warehouses.
Go see the warehouses.
Awesome.
I went there. Yeah.
Nobody's in them and that the future of work is it doesn't involve people.
There's people there, but you should see them. I'd love to know what you think.
No one's invited me. No one's invited me to the warehouses.
Go to the warehouse. They even let me take pictures. I'll send you pictures.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. It's cool.
Next time I ask, can I bring my buddy Scott?
Yes, I
would
will.
Love to see
all right,
an
we're
Amazon
going to,
warehouse.
We're going to Seattle. We're going to go see.
Yeah, that's a place I would go.
There was one in Kent, I think, Washington, which is right near the Seattle headquarters.
But I went to a fundraiser of a representative who's running for Senate in Nevada yesterday. And I didn't realize it, but it was being held at one of these companies.
Mm-hmm.
And I walked in. I was immediately self-conscious. I didn't order coffee there at their coffee bar.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I felt like I was going to slip and break a hip. And I felt like I was, you know, you feel so old at these places.
Yeah.
And I felt as if I just needed to get out of there, that I was intruding and I didn't want to eat their food.
You just
want to
observe them from afar. You're like the Margaret Mead.
It's just easier.
Yeah, it is. You're right.
It's easier.
Yeah. Although I can meet them and be just as unpleasant later.
Yeah, but you're a journalist and you have a level of rigor and a level of fairness.
Okay.
And these people know you. I think it's much more interesting to be.
This is just your observations. These are just your intelligent observations. Okay.
Commentator.
Two questions from Gaurav Bhatti. What is the biggest problem for Apple today, other than the usual generic problems throughout the valley, diversity, harassment, unequal. Other than those, Mrs. Lincoln.
Other than those?
Unequal gender pay and lack of privacy. And which big tech company has the least embarrassing public perception when it comes to AI taking away people's jobs and why? The first
so
one,
two questions.
Apple.
Biggest threat to Apple is the biggest threat to every company in America right now, and that's Amazon.
Mm-hmm. All right.
The most innovative, disruptive piece of hardware in the history of mankind was the iPhone, and it's passing the baton unwittingly to Amazon's Echo.
All right.
So Amazon is their biggest threat. I think that in terms of who is sort of the least damaged. It's actually, you're involved in this.
Mm-hmm.
It's absolutely now Apple, and it's because of the interview Tim Cook did with you.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me more. Let me be clear. I still think he's largely full
this
of shit.
This is an interview I did in Chicago with
him.
Yeah,
the MSNBC and the guy.
It was an hour.
Chris. But quite frankly, he came across as the adult in the room.
Right.
It's like, okay.
He is an adult, so that is
And he's a thoughtful guy. He's got, they saw an opening strategically to put their finger in the wound of privacy for the other guys.
Mm-hmm.
And he talks about it as a human right. He's super likable. You get the sense he really believes what he's saying.
Mm-hmm.
And they're well positioned because they've gone the other way to say, we don't even want your data.
Right.
So to a certain extent, Apple has brilliantly taken advantage of the situation and starched their hat white.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
are they the largest tax avoider in the history of corporate America? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is it easy for them to talk about data and privacy when they're not in that building? Yeah. Is taking the iPad away from my 7-year-old tantamount to watch taking a crack pipe away from a crack addict? I mean, literally, you have boys,
yep,
right?
They love their iPhones.
You literally register this emotion.
Mm-hmm.
So we let our kids on screen. When you first have kids, you think you're going to pierce. They look at you like memo to self, must kill father.
Right, yeah.
And something strange is going on in the human brain there. So if all of a sudden Tim Cook's very concerned about privacy, I would love it if Mark Zuckerberg all of a sudden became very concerned with the young male brain and iPads and phones.
Yeah, Yeah, maybe he will. He was trying very hard to defend himself.
I think he's scared. I don't think he wants to.
He did a mistake. He's like, what my favorite thing was, his argument is iPhones are expensive. And I was like, newsflash, you're kidding. Nobody knew that. Like,
wow.
That was their argument.
There are a lot
it's for
of money.
Rich people.
Yeah.
It's for rich people.
No,
I was
he
like,
should stay out of that.
That was a mistake.
Anyone who takes on Tim Cook is going to get the shit kicked out of him.
That was a mistake.
Because he's likable,
yeah.
Smart. You don't want to, the exact response
and he's
there.
Correct.
The
he's,
exact response there should have been, I'm going to take this to heart because I think Tim Cook is a leader.
Exactly.
And incredibly
that's exactly
smart.
What I thought. What was amazing what was said. That he answered a question. It was they sell things to rich people because I was like, we know that. Like,
yeah,
we're not mad.
Figure that out.
We're not mad at Apple about that.
Yeah,
we're not
Facebook
indignant
sells advertising
we
to rich companies. Does, we're all trying
yes,
to sell things
yeah,
to rich people.
Yeah, it was funny. Indignant.
Hashtag money.
You can't buy, hashtag money. Good, well done.
Right.
They were indignant that Apple sells things that are expensive. And that was ridiculous for Mark to
yeah,
know. The second
stuff.
Thing was, if you looked at the notes they had at the hearing, there was like a tiny little bunch of like little things that he had to refer to for privacy. The Apple section was enormous. Like, he was so mad. They were so mad about that. It really got their goat.
I think
really,
they all hate each other.
Yeah,
I think when you get to that point,
goat.
It's like being a partner at Goldman Sachs. You look around the partner meeting, and everybody wakes up in the morning and looks in the mirror and says, hello, Mr. CEO.
Yeah.
They
yeah.
all believe. Every senator wakes up in the morning and says hello, Mrs. President.
Right, yeah.
So they all start to hate each other. They all feel that the rightful heir to the throne.
Yeah, which is interesting. But I think Tim has his longer game. I don't think he does. Like, I don't feel like
he seems more thoughtful. He's faced probably more adversity. I have this theory.
I don't
think
he gives a fuck. That's what I think.
Well, he's at the point.
He's
probably
at the point. Like I've already, like I'm.
But you and I are the same.
Yeah.
Same age. This is the wonderful thing that happens. You realize you've got 10 more Christmases with your 7-year-old. Mm-hmm. Maybe you've got 30 more here on the planet, and you start speaking your mind and thinking a little bit more about the future. A 33-year-old, I'm convinced that white kids from affluent families are less empathetic and make less. That sounds racist.
Mm-hmm.
Kids from privilege, who've never had to overcome any sort of adversity. Where, unlike immigrants, unlike people who maybe grew up with some form of discrimination, I think they're the scariest CEOs.
Yeah.
Because I think their attitude is
they don't even think about it.
I'm a competitor. You know, sign
up,
join or die.
Oh, you're being abused on Twitter? What? I
made it. Why shouldn't you? I don't think they have the same level of empathy and what I'll call self-awareness.
I was making this. I was at an event with Samantha Bee last night that she was doing, and I was making the point that the Harvey Weinstein stories were written by women and a gay man. That's who broke them. There was a reason for that. They had an empathy that, or had suffered some sort of, they understood much better. And everybody knew about that and didn't get it out. It was interesting. That's where a lot of the anger is, not the anger, the action is coming from. All right, which big tech companies have the least embarrassing public relations problem?
Apple.
Apple. Okay,
yeah.
You're absolutely right. And the rest of them are. The rest of them, you know, Elon Musk is sort of on the other side of that.
Yeah, he blew it, though. It sucks to be a grown-up. He had his Enron moment. Remember the CEO of Enron called an analyst an asshole?
Oh,
and
yeah.
And then six months later, he was in jail. When Elon Musk said that the analyst quit, everybody has a boss.
Tell all. He's not going to like this, but go ahead.
Look, everybody has a boss. And when you decide to go public and the marketplace gives you a multiple of revenues on an auto company that should be trading at a multiple of EBITDA, of which you have none, yeah, it sucks to be a grown-up. You take people's questions and you humor them.
Mm-hmm.
You don't say, oh, these questions are boring, and then go and then let a fanboy ask you questions for six and call these people boring. I think the right thing happened there. That's when the chairman of the company, unfortunately, Elon's both the chairman, but maybe someone else on the board, maybe his brother, who's also on the board, can sit him down. But that's when a good board member calls and says, look, buddy, get your shit together.
Right.
If you're going to take their money and you're going to get incredibly cheap source of capital, which we are using to fulfill your mission to put men on Mars, then you have to put up with questions like this.
Right.
And there was an immaturity tax placed on Tesla shareholders of $3 billion. They lost $3 billion that day after announcing good numbers.
Immaturity tax.
You don't get on an earnings call and say these are stupid, boring questions when analysts are asking you about liquidity.
Well, isn't that the Elon thing to do?
This firm has a liquidity issue.
Right.
I mean, that could take the stock down. I said, I think Tesla, it could run the risk of declining 30 to 50% this year because they could end up in a liquidity crunch at the end of the year. And he's staked a claim now that they don't need to raise additional capital. Mm-hmm. They should have done it last
Why
year.
Why is he doing it, do you think?
Why is he doing?
What he did.
I think that a guy like that, who's the Thomas Edison of our generation, has been
he
told that over and over.
Fools, yeah.
You get to a point where you're. I mean, why am I occasionally angry at rude to an Uber driver? And I'm not proud of that.
Right.
But you get you get used to a certain level of expectation around thinking you're important, around you anchor off the best service you've ever had, and you find yourself being rude, recognizing, you know what, it sucks to be a grown-up, and you need to be more empathetic. And when you're the CEO of a company, you sign up to put up with a lot of bullshit from investors.
No, I had Jason Calacanis, who knows him very well, and I know him pretty, I haven't talked to him in a while because we've had it back and forth on something, but he was saying he sets these enormous goals, and then he's up frustrated when people are like, the goals are much more interesting than other people's goals, right? Going to Mars, doing the cars. They're more ambitious.
Oh,
things.
It's every
And so if he gets to
dream.
70% and you still say, why didn't you get the other, he gets annoyed by that. Like, he's setting these ridiculous goals to start with, and so he doesn't want your guff, essentially.
You have to thread a fine needle to be an effective CEO, and that is you have to be a megalomaniac that has your ego in check.
Mm-hmm.
You have to believe you're capable of accomplishing these extraordinary things.
Right.
And what is the core competence of these guys? They're too stupid and crazy to know they're going to fail.
Right.
But in order to have that kind of megalomania, at the same time, you also have to keep it in check and have a certain amount of empathy and a certain amount of humility.
Right.
And that is very hard to find in one body.
Bezos.
He strikes me as very savvy.
He gets offended himself, but he never shows it.
Never shows anger, always quick to laugh.
I've seen it twice, and I was surprised.
Well, supposedly, if you work for him, you see it a lot.
Yes, you do. He got mad at me about something years ago, and he's still mad at me, I think.
He's still angry?
I think so. It's like 15 years.
But he lets you into his warehouses.
Maybe he doesn't know I'm there. I don't know. We talked a lot, and he got mad. I know. He got mad about something, and I think he's still mad. It was a thing about end caps.
Hashtag forgiveness, Jeff.
No, I don't know. I feel it. Because we talked quite a bit. We used to talk quite a bit. Okay, too embarrassed. I've read Professor Galloway critiques CEOs like Zuckerberg and Bezos for business decisions that are arguably unethical. I understand that some part of it, that is branding. People need to like you to buy your stuff. But do companies have ethical responsibilities? This is a really great question. Civic ones. Example, I live in Seattle. We have a huge homeless problem, and Amazon stopped construction of a new building in protest of a head tax to help a homeless population arguably displaced by Amazon's growth. Same thing with the Rooney rules. Yeah. They finally went into them. So do they have ethical responsibilities?
Yeah, I'll take my building and go home. Yeah, they do. But I'm a bit cynical. I think in a capitalist society, the enterprise, the for-profit enterprise, is there first and foremost to create economic security for its shareholders and employees. And I think that's what they need to be focused on.
Mm-hmm.
Being a good citizen is as good business. But at the end of the day, the externalities that are caused by unfettered growth, it's our responsibility to take the 23% of GDP we allocate to government and hold government accountable and ensure that they do behave
ethically.
Will
government do that?
Well, I actually think government's underrated in terms of, I think for the most part—
They have the ability to do it.
They have the ability, and they've done a pretty good job. I mean, we have figured out, we do have emission standards on cars in California.
Well,
we do have— We'll
right.
see, right?
Right.
We do have standards. Regulation does work. Maybe it's inefficient. Maybe it's expensive.
Mm-hmm.
I think the ethical responsibility is on behalf of the citizenry. I think we're the ones that are failing
here. I agree with you 100%.
Not Facebook.
I understand.
It's our job.
It is.
Right?
But it's our job to bother them to do it. Like to
hold
make them
accountable.
And make them feel guilty about it. Like, I think it does have an impact if you keep saying, you have a responsibility, what are you doing? I think it gets in there.
But I'll give an example, and I'm nervous saying this. I bought Facebook stock the day before the earnings because I think, and that's hypocritical because I'm very critical of Facebook. I think young people or old people, such as me, I think we have an obligation to create economic security for us and our families, and then to use that economic security to create fantastic, secure households to raise thoughtful, considerate, empathetic children. I also think we have a responsibility to elect officials, as I want to do and fighting to do and willing to spend some money on, to put in place elected representatives that will hold these companies accountable.
Mm-hmm.
But the notion that this revolution is going to be consumer-led, no way.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think we should expect consumers.
Yep.
Consumers, at the end of the day, want their little black dress for $9.99.
Yeah.
Full stop.
Yeah.
And we talk a big game. Everybody talks about how young students, you know, they come talk to me, are more mission-driven now, more socially conscious. I just think that's such bullshit.
Well, it's interesting. I think one of the things someone told me, consumers, they were talking about Facebook, or one of them, and said, consumers don't care to me. And I said, yeah, I don't care if they don't care. We're just going to do it anyway. We're going to just regulate them anyway. It doesn't matter.
Well, that's
if they care.
The point.
That shouldn't be the criteria.
You could, there is a huge marketplace for consumers who will fly for $49 with one pilot and poor safety maintenance.
Right.
But we've decided, no, we're going to regulate. We're going to create something called the FAA.
Yeah.
And even though there's a large consumer base that would take, you know, the
near
infinitely
cheaper,
small risk but take bigger risk, we've decided that we're going to regulate things. And we step in. And
so it's like not, the kids in sugar. Like, they would eat sugar.
They would do it, right? It's our job. It's our job.
They're always saying this to me. It's like, there's not a business reason. I said, we're just going to do it anyway. We're just going to go for it.
But I also think the business reason, they haven't done anything wrong. I don't think we're punishing them. But if you look at where we are in the economic cycle, I think we could unleash another 20 to 30 years of unbelievable innovation and shareholder growth by breaking these guys up. I think we need to oxygenate
breaking
them
up. Okay, we'll finish on that in a second. But one more question. Ask them the future of AI and machine learning, how it affects jobs. That's why it's going to get broke, because these jobs impact. Do you think that's the most important thing?
I think it's the scariest thing. I spoke after Jeff Bezos at the Alternative Investments Conference hosted by J.P. Morgan last year in Miami, and he said he was a fan of universal guaranteed income, which I found terrifying, that the most intelligent, forward-looking business person in the world is basically seeing the future of business, and it doesn't involve humans.
Mm-hmm.
And what they fail to realize, they think they're being charitable by saying—
That's a very important point you just made.
They think they're being charitable about keeping people at home. I get my identity through two things— being a good dad and my work. And the idea that I would be paid to stay home because I was no longer viable in the workplace, to me, would be incredibly emasculating. Take my dignity. Part of the American experience is we're philanthropic, we're innovative, and you know what? We work. And so my feeling is that Jeff Bezos, you know,
saying that
is really frightening. And I would say to him, you know, show some real fucking vision. Figure out a future that involves a lot of jobs.
And what those jobs would be? Scott?
Well,
why should humans mine coal? It's ridiculous. It's dangerous.
Oh, get rid of the dirty. Get rid of the dirty jobs. But there's a lot of. I think there's a lot of fantastic opportunities. I'd like to think for more work, and the jobs are out there. We just don't seem to be willing to invest in the training, apprenticeships, education.
So who's again responsible? Is that these companies? Jeff Bezos should be thinking about. I agree with you.
Well, I think a guy like that, when you're the wealthiest man in the world, I do think you take on a different level of responsibility. Because arguably speaking, if wealth equals power, he's the most powerful person in the world. So with great power comes great responsibility. Yeah, I think it goes back to government. I think we need to spend more money. Look, we make these decisions. People immediately digress to, this is the world we live in. No, it's not. The world is what we make of it.
Right.
In New York.
Scott, you should run for office.
Yeah, there you go. I'll support you. I'll write you a check and that's you.
Come on, Scott.
And hear all the bad things about you come out of the closet.
Yeah.
But in New York, we have mandated, when my son was speech delayed, the government showed up with a bunch of people to help my kids start to speak. And it's a wonderful thing. And we have pre-K funding for kids. We're going to have more secure kids. What your governor is doing in California is he's being responsible and he's reallocating
capital.
We're going
to miss Jerry Brown.
I think he's been fantastic.
We're going to miss Jerry Brown.
And so, government and society, the fabric that brings us all together, has an incredible obligation and opportunity. We have the money.
So it's not the federal government at this moment.
I don't think so. I think we've decided that, I mean, we're getting off topic here, but when you spend two-thirds of your money in further enriching the wealthiest generation in history, baby boomers, I think we've kind of become...
Yeah, lost the story.
Lost the script here.
Right, okay. All right, Scott, any other prediction you want to make before we end?
Any other prediction?
Go crazy.
I think Tesla's value declines by 30% to 50%. Facebook's going to be over $200 in the next 90 days and $250 by the end of the year. Amazon's going to be our first $1 trillion company. Spotify's going to double in value in the next 24 months.
Having Danny like to code, they'll be double in value. Okay.
Well, they could be the fifth horseman. They tap into an instinct. Music is really important in terms of storytelling, emotion.
And Snap.
Snap's going to be acquired. It'll be picked up. Somebody. What do you think? The obvious one is Google, but I don't know. What do you think? Amazon. Who do you think acquires Snap? You think Amazon does?
Apple, Amazon. I'm trying to think of who he would sell to. He's a very particular young man.
Well, and he controls the company.
Yeah.
I mean, there's an example, right? A 27-year-old who controls what teenagers see in terms of content, who can't be removed from
office.
He
wants someone with taste. He has a lot of taste, I got to say.
He's a design guy, right?
More than that. Whenever I talk to him, I always learn something.
Here's a question for you. Which of the four has the best taste? Who would you argue has the best taste?
Of these four companies?
Yeah. Like, who would he want to most sell to? If you're Evan Spiegel, who would
different.
He most want to sell to?
Apple has the most taste, but I don't think he'd get on. It's an older group cohort of guys there. Amazon? I think he'd be most challenged by Jeff Bezos. Yeah. Google, no.
See, I think me Jeff Bezos, Evan Spiegel, and throw in Zac Efron, and South Beach would just slay it. I think we would have such a good time.
It sounds like a buddy.
So you know these guys?
That sounds like a buddy movie.
I'm ready. I'm in.
Okay, all right, Scott, I'll tell them.
I'll pay. I just got a new Discover card. Okay. Hashtag money.
Okay, all right, thank you. Once again, Scott, this is another great episode of Two Minute Chance and another great episode with Scott Galloway. Thanks for joining him on the show. You're going to see more of me and Scott Galloway soon, hopefully, on lots of different things. You can find more interviews I've done with Scott in the archives of my other podcast, Recode Decode. And where do you find those archives? I'm glad you asked. The past episodes of all our podcasts are available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play Music, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Or you can listen to every episode of recode.net/podcasts. And if you use Apple Podcasts, please leave us a review there. Otherwise, tell someone about the show in person, over email, on Twitter, on Facebook, or Snapchat. If you have questions about any tech topic or the latest news, tweet them to @recode with the hashtag TooEmbarrassed or email them to TooEmbarrassed@recode.net. Thanks for listening. Thanks also to Cadence 13 and Vox Media, which sells those ads so you can listen to this show for free. Thanks to our editor, Joel Robbie, and our producer, Eric Johnson. I'll be back next week to answer more of the questions you've been too embarrassed to ask, so tune in then.
Hi, this is Dan Frommer, editor-in-chief of Recode. We're conducting an audience survey and want to hear from too embarrassed to ask listeners. We're interested in hearing your thoughts about how we can better serve you on this podcast and in all the places and platforms where Recode has a presence. The survey is completely painless and will take just 5 minutes of your time. To share your thoughts, just head to recode.net/survey. That's recode.net/survey. And thank you for being a member of the Recode community, and thanks in advance for helping us continue to improve.